At approximately 5:45, Colonel Musi, Captain Prince, and some 90 C Company Rangers and Alamo Scouts resumed their march to the south, aiming directly for the main gate. After traversing one more square of rice, however, Prince concluded that the danger of detection was growing unacceptable. They had drawn within less than a mile of the camp, with the guard towers not only visible, but beginning to take on definition. Captain Prince lowered his hand in a sweeping gesture, and then all the rangers fell to the ground. For the remaining three-quarters of a mile, they would have to chart a slow, steady advance on their bellies, an army of snakes. Lying on the crusty floor of a paddy, the rangers strapped their rifles to their backs or held them out in front, loosely cradled in their arms. Then they dug their knees and elbows into the dirt and began inching forward, pulling themselves through the long straight rows of dried rice. The ground was strewn with old carabao dung, and the flat expanses were occasionally interrupted by shallow puddles, faintly spluttering with tadpoles and schools of tiny fish. At one point, a group of rangers disturbed an unseen nest, and armies of red ants skittered over them by the score, darting under their clothes, leaving trails of welts on their skin. Even though the men were hugging the ground, Prince began to fear that the Japanese would spot them anyway. The dikes that delineated the paddies were as hard and thick as brick walls, and more than 2 feet high in some places. Each time the rangers came upon one of these earthen dividers, they had to climb up and over, exposing themselves even more conspicuously for a few terrifying seconds before dropping down into the next quadrant. This awkward hop, performed by so many rangers in spasmodic intervals across the field, seemed like precisely the sort of unnatural movement that would snag a guard's attention. Yet for some reason, it didn't. Slowly, painstakingly, the rangers advanced another 500 yards with impunity, and another. They were smeared with mud and drenched in sweat. Their necks ached, their shoulders burned, their arms trembled from a hard hour's game of playing serpent. They were drawing tantalizingly close enough to see movement inside the compound and even make out the shapes of guards perched in the towers. When they passed by the lone nipa shack, Nellist and Bakilar, the two Alamo scouts who'd been patiently sitting out the afternoon inside, shinnied down the ladder and joined them. The late afternoon winds had gradually abated, and a leaden silence fell over the plain. The sun grew fat and luxuriant as it lowered itself beside Mount Arayat, the vast dormant volcano to the southwest. In the sanguinary light, the jagged ridgelines of the Sierra Madre to the east broke through in sharper, richer blues, and the haze of the fields seemed to lift. Prostrate before enemy sentinels, enveloped by open earth and open sky, strung out over nearly 100 yards, the men felt utterly exposed, as though the Shinto gods might be following their progress and waiting for the right moment to impale them. "I don't know why they didn't see us," recalled Ranger Alvy Robbins. "There was plenty of light. If they'd been really looking with their glasses, they could have seen that there's something going on out there that's not right." "I figured we had to just be about the luckiest people on earth," said Ranger Roy Peters. "The Lord had just closed those Japanese eyes where they couldn't see. That's the only way I could figure it."